Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
The glass is made of yards of highly chased.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, and this is 3CR's look at what's going on in the Australian film industry. We talk to filmmakers, we talk to technicians, we talk to people putting on festivals. But of course, the festival festivals are normally held caught at on screen on Saturdays. So today, just reminding you that Melbourne Documentary Film Festival is now finished, and what started is MIF, Melbourne International Film Festival, has kicked off and it will continue to throughout August. So if you are unaware of the program, go online. If you go to your local library, you'll probably find that the paper version is there waiting for you to have a browse. There's lots of stuff going on, lots of people are buying tickets, and in fact, like in the old days, some people have actually decided that they're going to spend the next 2 weeks entirely involved in MIF. So you may be one of those people, and we may not see you for the next 2 weeks because you'll be completely inundated with film watching, because it is the premier event for film in Melbourne and and Victoria, you'd have to say. That's what's going on at the moment on the big level. And I got to have a chat with David Ngo, who is in town with his new film, Never Get Busted, which is going to be shown on Friday at MIF. It's doing its Australian premiere, because that's the thing about film festivals. They do premieres, and it's a wild, woolly ride, is Never Get Busted. But I'll let you get a taste of it with my chat with David. Now, David's very well known because he's been working in the industry for quite a long time. You might remember his film, The Girl with One Eye, but he's had a much more varied career than just doing some features, as he tells us. So here we go. This is David.
Never Get Busted. I mean, it's interesting because it's a quintessentially US story, but you're an Australian filmmaker. So how did you get roped into this?
Roped in is a great way of putting it. Co-creator Aaron and I had seen a very short interview with Barry Cooper, who's the lead subject of the documentary, and we just could not believe that nobody had made a feature-length or series version based on his life, starring Matthew McConaughey or Woody Harrelson. It just screamed to be made. And so we just dug in, and we reached out to Barry, and it seems like there had been various versions along the years that had almost been made for various reasons. But our pitch to him was that if he went with us, essentially we would start tomorrow and we would start filming with him within like 2 months, which is what we did.
Yeah, and I know that your history of filmmaking has incorporated not just narrative features, but also a lot of interesting reality TV. I mean, because they're not, and this is like a fusion, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, there was like a lot of different things in my career that somehow like came together in a weird confluence of styles, in a sense. I started in reality TV. Then worked in children's television. I also worked in a lot of animation, and there's animation aspects to it. But there definitely is a certain energy, I think, that you get with reality TV in terms of the fast-paced nature of it and how you really cultivate a story in the edit out of a lot of raw material. And for this one, we had over 100 hours of interviews, and we had another 300 plus hours of archive to sort of sift through and craft that into a story.
Yeah, okay. And of course, he's a larger than life character, and as I said, it is a quintessentially US story, but there must have been a lot of blowback because he himself is a magnet for divisive comic, right?
That's exactly who he is. I remember writing a line at one point when we were developing it, and I had this sentence, wherever Barry goes, chaos follows. And that is exactly our experience of both him, his story, but also so many of the people that we met along the way that were in some ways affected both positively and negatively by this very unique and brazen individual.
Tell me, at the beginning, it says that you were the showrunner. So then you're credited as writer and co-director. And Stephen McCallum, who's your co-director, I mean, he's quite well known for a film called 1%, which is all about biker gangs in Perth, right? So this in a funny kind of a way is a kind of riff on a similar kind of theme, isn't it? Sort of male... probing masculinity in its most aggressive form. Would that be a true analysis, or is that just being a bit fly?
I'm not sure that's how it intended to be from the start. I mean, there's just like a lot of people that were involved along the way that brought different aspects to it. So, for instance, when we first took this out, we took it to executive producers John Batsek and Chris Smith. And so there was a lot of sort of Chris Smith in it in a way, because he's a person who's done Fyre Festival and Tiger King and those kind of, you know, big pop documentaries, as well as John Batsek, who's recently done Beckham. He's doing the Manhunt series for Netflix, which is like also big punchy documentaries with larger than life characters and stories that are both entertaining, but then also have this other layer of political or social commentary within them, even though they are presented in a very kind of, for lack of a better term, popcorn-y way. But I would say in a way that the final presentation of it in terms of how it is kind of finally presented, a big part of that is just the actual overall broader team. It's always funny when you're sitting here doing these interviews as a singular person representing something, but there's so many of those things within it that were altered and kind of become a representation of the overall group of people that made it. For instance, the certain energy of the edit that Julian Hart brought to it, who had done Tinder Swindler and Drive to Survive, who had a particular fun way of using, you know, split screens and really playing off characters against each other, as well as the incredible music composition from Simon Walbrook, who like really turned it into a rock show. And it really does play that way in the cinema.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's quite clear that's what it's about. What does this mean about filmmaking? Like, I was really curious about Screen Australia putting money into this production. It seemed really strange to me. But what was it that they found attractive?
I guess the main thing that it was to do with talent, probably more than anything else. I think it's such a rare opportunity to be making, in the documentary space in particular, making films that are of a global scale and have the ability to travel overseas in that way. And for Australian filmmakers to be working with the caliber of people that we worked with, I mean, they're Academy Award winners, Emmy Award winners, or at least many, many times nominated. And so the things that you learn working with people who are playing at the absolute top of the top game that there is just so incredibly rare. And over the 6 years that we made this, in particular, working with John, Chris and Julian, the amount that I have learned, not just as a filmmaker, but also the expectations, like nothing was ever quite good enough. You were always pushing yourself a little bit deeper and getting to a point where it starts to become a little bit more muscle memory to it. because there is a bar that they set, and that setting is like nothing short of the top of the top it can possibly be. And you either rise to that occasion or you fall. And so for me, it felt like an incredible challenge, but also one with a team that was really, really supportive and knowing of the process that it takes to get there.
Yeah, right. Okay. And the other thing that was interesting to me was how much was it shooting? Like you said, it took 6 years to put together. And I must say, personally, I would have found Barry Cooper really irritating to keep company with for 6 years. But that's just me, of course. And I was wondering how much of it was shoot and how much was it craft?
There's not, the actual shoot portion of it is relatively short in documentary. So there was about a year worth of research, which was largely handled by Erin Williams-Weir, the co-creator. And so she was doing a lot of that independently herself, with me sort of feeding in much more from a narrative perspective of how we would craft that overall breadth of research into an actual narrative, you know, dramatic story. And then in terms of the filming, with both Barry and all the rest of the subjects that were involved, it's not that huge amount of time. We filmed for Barry for a week. We filmed with every other subject for about a day each. And even though there was maybe 25 other, I call them subjects, obviously they're real people. So that's another 25 days. And then there was probably another week filming with Barry towards the end as well. So when you add all that up, and let's say that that's, you know, 50, 60 days of filming, the real work starts when you hit the edit. That's where all the story is told, and where you are just, you know, you have this abundance of material and you can go any which way you want, but how you craft that into a singular line story that is engaging, funny, dramatic, and tense for an audience and really has an emotional effect, that's really where the work begins.
What were the influences in regards to the shape? Like you said, you've created it into a fast, action-packed, amusing and interesting and a hard-hitting kind of documentary. And of course, it's got a lot of legs because, of course, the role of police, law and order and ordinary people's lives are at the crux of this. I mean, this was the epiphany that Barry Cooper himself had, which was that he was destroying lives even though he thought he was Mr. Action Figure, right? This is actually really important, especially in America at the moment, I suppose. Were you referencing other reality TV shows when you were making it, or were you crafting something new yourself?
I felt like, I'd had a lot of influence in terms of like other things that I'd been watching. I mean, we started filming this before Tiger King came out and a lot of those other, you know, big sort of global documentaries. And so in some ways, I think it was natural instinct towards also how the story presented itself. Barry is very much a larger than life, you know, charismatic character, and he's very brash. And he's also got this very, Texas style to him. So really, I think you've got to let the story drive how it's formed. And I remember, because I originally studied graphic design, I remember the first lecture that I went to, and the lecturer really drilled into us the idea that form follows function. And so the story that you're telling and the way that you're trying to present that both visually and sonically needs to really be aligned with what it is that you're trying to do. So in some ways, I wanted it to feel like if Barry and the other characters within the story had made it themselves, for it to feel authentically that they had made it. And one of the bigger references was, you know, other filmmakers in the area, people like Robert Rodriguez, who has a certain kind of brash, raw style to the way that he makes things, and also the really kind of clashing of visuals that he uses, and the hard cuts and the, you know, loud kind of use of score. And one of the first conversations that I had with the composer was we gave him a playlist of music that we had been collecting over the years of development and filming that Erin and I had put together. And we gave him that, we gave him a cut of the first 50 minutes. And I said, I'm just going to give you one line of direction, and then I want to see what you come up with. And that one line of direction was simply, what if Robert Rodriguez made a documentary? Mm-hmm. And what he came back with sounded, it was the sound. Like he found it, which had this raw, really thick bass guitar to it. And then I found out it was the bass guitarist from Wolf Mother that he'd got and recorded with. And it just felt so right.
Yeah, it does. It does actually sound exactly right. I mean, you talk about world films, a world film. And I remember someone telling me that they did a very long road trip. They went on trains, actually, across America. It was a while ago. But they said that when they got to Canada, they thought, oh, my God, thank God, nobody's talking super loud and telling me everything that they think without any breaks. And in a way, this kind of film is America Raw. And it has none of the politeness that, say, Europeans might employ, or even Australians might employ in their filmmaking. This is a really interesting thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, back from my days of working in reality TV, I remember when you'd go around with a camera and you would be just trying to collect, say, Vox Pops or, you know, other little bits of interview here. The average Australian shies away from the camera as much as they possibly can. They run the other way. And so the main people you end up getting on camera are probably quite strange often, right? And that's how it gets presented. In America, it's very different because I think that they innately within their culture have that Andy Warhol, everyone's 15 minutes of fame idea. So they're sort of already, pretty much everyone we met along the way was such a natural storyteller. They just knew how to just say it as a statement and have no apology for it. So prior to filming like the second lot of production that we did in the US, Aaron and I drove around Texas and met with a lot of these subjects, both to gain their trust, but also to get a sense of what they'd be like on camera. And every single one we met, we're like, they could be their own documentary. One, of course, they, you know, sit within the world of Barry. They sit perfectly in that world, but they were all just such natural and also very unique storytellers in the way that they went about it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The other thing is, it is about law and order, and he caused a great deal of angst amongst, or rather, pushback. You know, like how dare you bring us into disrepute? That's the way they saw it, wasn't it? How about the film? How is it related to that kind of response?
That was some of the hardest interviews to get. And I tell you, I got abused on the phone a lot of times by police officers that had formerly worked with Barry in terms of trying to get an interview with them. So that was probably the toughest part of it in a way. And a lot of them, you know, over the years since Barry has left, have risen up in the ranks too. So they're a bit higher up in the police force. And they are clearly not big fans of Barry in many, many ways, not just because of his criticism of policing, particularly in Texas, but also the way he went about it. And so it was a very, very personal betrayal that they all felt about what he did.
And where does he stand now? Is Barry happy with the film?
Yeah, he's very happy with the film. He loves the film. So we didn't let him watch it at all until recently at a screening at in Los Angeles. And so he was very, very nervous. He told me afterwards, he said he pretty much blanked on the whole experience. And so I had to give him a screener to watch it afterwards by himself. And he's really, really proud of it. He thinks it really sort of captures, you know, who he is as a person and his journey, particularly, you know, as a cop that became an activist and the cost of what that is. And for me, that was like the biggest thing that drove us from the start, is finding a subject that is has a really complete arc. Like, I've never met someone who's changed their life so dramatically, and multiple times as well within his lifetime. I feel like he's lived 10 lifetimes in one. But to do that and also be able to be a person who's charismatic on screen naturally, as you see in his interviews with, you know, Fox and CNN and Vice and all of these interviews that you see him in. He really knows how to carry himself and also give you those really kind of meaty sound bites that you can later, you know, work within an edit.
Yeah. Well, he's smart, isn't he? Or maybe it's a reflection on the American cultural ideological landscape that they all talk in sound bites, but I mean, it's handy. I'll have to say it's handy. It's interesting that you didn't let him have any input into the development and the shooting and the crafting. Often people I've spoken to, especially if it's First Nations people, they'll be party to the whole range of stuff. But this is a different issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you're doing films with certain cultural sensitivity, I can really understand why you need to do that. But I think broadly, as a documentarian, I think that there is a lot of ethical issues in having a key subject have any kind of power over how it's presented. And so we're seeing a lot of that, and there's a lot of criticisms of that, particularly in the celebrity doc space, because these celebrities are obviously... it's very important what their image is and how they're presented in every single way. So if they don't have final cut of what it's going to be in the end, they're just not going to agree to do it. So a lot of those people making those films have to agree to that in order for it to be made. But is it truthful storytelling? I think highly questionable. So with this, from the very beginning, I said to Barry that we are objective observers to this, right? You just need to trust that we are going to tell the story as we see it. He knows he's a divisive character. We met as many people who hate him as love him, and they are going to have a voice as well. And so they should. And I think that that is the best and fairest way to make any documentary.
Is it true the film's on at MIFF?
Yeah, so we are having our Australian premiere at the Melbourne Film Festival at, I believe it's 6:30 or 6:45 p.m. on this Friday at Acme One. And that's going to be, I'm very, very excited. I've had a couple of films in Melbourne before, and it's one of my favorite film festivals in the world. It's got just such a fantastic audience, but has also just been a big part of my career over the years.
Have a good one. Thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you very much. And for anyone who wants to know information, you can follow it on Instagram and Facebook at Never Get Busted Film. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
The Victorian state government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance, such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
My name is Joe O'Dwyer, the actor, and I played the lead in a film in What About Sal? You are listening to 3CR.
You are. You're listening to Showreel on 3CR, a look at the Australian film industry. And we were just having a chat with film director and writer David Ngo about his film Never Get Busted, which, as he said, is going to be having its Australian premiere on Friday, this Friday, that's tomorrow, at Acme One at 6:45, probably 6:30 is a good idea. Look it up and you can buy a ticket, and it should be great on a big screen, I'll have to say. I only saw it on a small screen, but it's action-packed, and it is actually part of the new wave of wild, on steroids sort of pop documentaries that have been doing the rounds. It's the new flavour of the month, really. Exciting stuff. Next week, the
Published or Not, which is coming up next, is going to have a special edition. So Showreel is not going to be on. We're making room for their special edition. It's going to be an hour-long Published or Not next week. So don't forget to tune in, because they've got lots of amazing people that they're going to be talking to. And there's going to be a full house of presenters. So as I said, don't forget to tune in next week for a special edition of Published or Not. We're going to go out with another song by Alice Skye. She was part of the duo that was singing at the beginning, Something on My Mind. I almost couldn't stop myself from playing the entire song, even though I was supposed to start. This one's called Stay in Bed. But don't forget, don't stay in bed on Tuesday. Do go to the Defend Dissent rally at Parliament at 5:30. Talk to you in 2 weeks' time.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.